I love the fucking intros. They get me fired up.
Okay.
Ron, I'm ready to go as soon as the intro goes.
Listen, do the pause. Edit. There we go. There we go. Hey, everybody. Welcome to It's Just Bodybuilding, episode 17. Today, it's Dusty Hand, Sean, myself. We're doing Coach's Corner, answering all your questions on It's Just Bodybuilding. Dusty.
Yes.
How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing awesome.
I've got a bunch of
sore throat.
Yes, I hear that.
Chewing shit. But I got an air fryer over the weekend. Hollingshead just sent me the correct speed to cook it at, so I feel good.
Oh, okay.
It's good.
what are you cooking in it? Like, is it for french fries exclusively?
Yeah, but I like to tell bodybuilders I'm cooking chicken.
Oh, which right.
We
right.
all know is bullshit, but
yeah.
For the video, I'm going to have to know so I can be like, look, I do this all the time.
It'll be like, oh, I've been putting all my green beans in the fryer and all my vegetables in the fryer.
I don't people want to actually know about the enchiladas I ate today. That'd
no,
be weird.
No. So it's episode 17.
Yes. Already.
It's freaky.
People are still following. It's amazing.
I know. It's been the response from James Hollingshead's interview was great.
I knew it would be. That was my personal favorite.
I had lots of people come up and tell me they related to what he said, and you know, like I think his mountain climbing story. I think a lot of people had their own version of that.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
And they were like, oh yeah, it was, you know, so it was pretty cool.
I used to live on the second story of an apartment. Similar.
You know, you come home from Costco.
I'm like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Wasn't quite 6 days, but I mean, it seemed the same sometimes. It's 120 degrees out. I mean, give me something, right?
Right. You're going to the gym twice a day, so that's four trips right there.
What if you forget your keys?
Mother.
Sometimes I'm like, fuck it, I'll take someone else's car.
No, I'm real happy. I was even, you know, I like the fact that our guests come on and they motivate me.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, cause they remind me of things that maybe I hadn't thought about for a while or stuff that I went through that I'm like, oh yeah, I fucking went through that. And like, cause I mean, you know I drop years a lot, freaks people out.
Back in 92, what the
fuck? Like, Ron, why do you have to date everything? I'm like, I don't know, that's just how my brain files everything in order of it, you know. And every time I tell a story, I know the year. I just, that's just one of my quirks. So you know, people tell stories like James talked about climbing the mountain, you know, or whatever, and it just just, you know, it always triggers a whole bunch of stuff that I remember, you know. So it's pretty cool to have the guests on, because it winds up being like you know, especially a guy like James that, you know, we have a lot in common with. You know, it sort of triggers a bunch of good, you know, recall.
So on your recall, so I'm going to blindside you so you're not ready for this. What would your answer have been to the same question, which was, what thing outside of bodybuilding impacted your mindset in bodybuilding? And his was the mountain.
You know, that's funny, because I thought about that after the episode. I thought, right, what would my answer have been? And I think that it's the same answer I would have thought of many years ago. It was when I left to go live in Australia with nothing but a hockey bag.
Right.
And I had no idea. I didn't know a single person, didn't know anything. I just knew I was going to go to Australia for at least a year. I had a working visa, and that's it. That was it. And, you know, I still sort of find myself living that way. Like, whenever we go on the trips, I never unpack.
Right.
Everything stays in my suitcase. It stays exact. I'm like a secret agent at a hotel. I could be gone.
You'd be gone in a minute.
One minute, I'm out the door. Forgotten nothing. Like, everything is right there, ready to go. And I always laugh. I'm like, that's from when I lived overseas. That's like that. Like everything's in my bag. Don't know. Like, you know.
It's so funny. I move into the hotel. Like I get there. I know hang everything. I got my drawers.
Yeah. You open up the doors. You hang up the jacket. You know.
Every little detail. It's like you've had to wait for me. I'm like, I need 20 minutes. Why? I'm unpacking.
Yeah, and I think and then also too, like even in my place, if you go in my bathroom, you'll find my shaving kit stays on the counter
with everything in it,
and a bunch of stuff is in it. Like almost everything's in it. So right. If someone said like we have to leave for the airport in 20 minutes, I would just grab. I maybe throw like one thing in there, and I just grab it and be good to go.
I'm starting to feel like you might be a criminal.
Yeah. So, and just a real simple way of living, and a real simple inventory of everything. Like, if I get a new pair of shoes, I get rid of a pair of shoes,
right?
And it, like that sort of thing, and sort of pretty stripped down. I really like living kind of stripped down. I don't like a lot of stuff. I don't want a lot of shit. I hate clutter. I like blank surfaces.
Right.
And I know that you're like, how does this relate to bodybuilding? But it's simplicity. And that worked its way. That was always why I was attracted. Maybe I'm attracted to simplicity for some other deep psychological reason, you know?
Right.
Why did I gravitate towards Dorian style training? Why did I gravitate towards the style of dieting that I always did, and the people that I always put as my role models and chose as my mentors and stuff? Everything about all of that, simplicity is like a root of all of it. I was never attracted to complicated schemes and, you know, that sort of stuff, I guess, is sort of a theme maybe. And, you know, I mean, but it was also just, to get, I guess, a little deeper into it. You know, that when I was living like that in Australia out of a hockey bag, your relationships are very important. The people that you choose to sort of like spend time with, that it's very important because, you know, you don't want anyone who's going to be a leech because you don't have much.
Right.
Like you don't want to accidentally let like a leech into your life because you're like, well, fuck, I'm already living out of a hockey bag. How much?
I can't give you the bag, bro. I need the bag.
You know what I mean? And I don't know. Just sort of being like, I think I've always been pretty good at choosing who I let into my circle. Right. And I think that those 2 years in Australia taught me a lot about that, you know? And living overseas, living out of a hockey bag overseas and still maintaining like a 100% bodybuilding focus. You know, like I'd just sleep on, I mean, I slept on my manager's couch for a month at one point, but right. I didn't miss a single meal. I didn't miss a single workout. You know, I was like, boom, boom, cooking my meals every day, you know, all that sort of shit. I just didn't have anywhere to live. So I was like crashing with a friend here and there. And, you know, I lived.
Did you ever get a place?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like I lived on the beach with a bunch of friends for like 5 months at one point in this really big old house, like a big six bedroom, crazy old beach house built in like the 20s.
That's badass.
And so it was super fun, man. And then me and my buddy, John, we rented a house for like, you know, it wound up being there for 2 years total. Right. So we lived together for a long time. So it was really fun, but just sort of like stripping everything away, you know, and leaving your comfort zone and, you know, not being attached to things. And also too, when you live like that, if something bad happens, like, I don't know, you lose your favorite pair of jeans or you just have to immediately get over it.
Right.
What are you going to do? You don't like, you just can't, you don't have time to dwell on stuff that you like, oh fuck, I lost that. It's okay. Just move on. Or I have to leave this place right now. The landlord's kicking out my buddy. And my buddy's letting me live here.
Right.
So I guess I got to go. Right. Like, just got to immediately leave. Right.
And you just, that's a riot.
Yeah. And you just, sometimes it's not your fault. Sometimes it has nothing to do with you, but you have to like change. You have to make decisions like that and just suddenly change. But still, you know, the whole time I was still, you know, on this bodybuilding path, you know, this monk thing, you know, can't miss a meal, you know, eating tuna out of a can and like that sort of shit. So you go through that. And I think that sort of like it you can't help but be affected by it later. So I like to think that it had a positive impact on my bodybuilding.
Right.
You know, what about you?
I think it's so funny because when I listen to James' story, I was like, and I think I do, a lot of people do this. You hear like a really like, wow thing. You're kind of like, I don't think there was any depth to how I got here. You know, I think I was just drawn to, I mean, you know, like I like things to be a certain way, organized the same. You know, like if you came to my house and said, where are the forks? I can tell you from where I'm sitting what drawer and how many sides over in the tray are the big forks.
Yeah. You know, and I bet all your forks match.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're all bought together. They're a team. If I lost one, I'd throw the whole fucking thing away and start over.
Right. My forks do not all match. Just so you know.
But I think that is why when I fell into bodybuilding in no sexy sort of way, it fit. Because, you know, I think that how I live is kind of weird compared to most people. And bodybuilding is that way where, you know, I joke all the time, if you want to kill me, wait till tomorrow. Follow me today. You'll know where I'll be tomorrow.
Right.
What time, when, every little detail is going to be the same. And if not, don't kill me that day because I'm really pissed off because everything's a fucking mess.
I might
fight back that day. So.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it's just that. It's the simplicity. And I think that's why I get frustrated with people who want to bodybuild and fuck up the part that requires no talent, which is, you know, they'll be like, oh, I didn't eat at noon because it's something stupid. And I'm like, well, eat at noon. Like, I couldn't. We'll eat at noon. What the fuck are you talking about? Or like you said, or eat early. You knew that shit was coming. You know, I don't understand people that be at the end of the day, like, I missed three meals today because of this. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Because it literally doesn't compute. You know what I mean? It's like for you, if somebody does something half-assed, your brain is like, why would you do it at all?
Time. Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And I mean, it's not like you're being sarcastic. It's like your brain literally does not understand why someone would do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think bodybuilding fits that for all of us, where it's like, I found a lot of bodybuilders are weird like me. You know, very organized, very, I shouldn't say organized. They're very the same. Whatever they are is what they are always. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I have found that the more OCD ones tend to be the same. You know what I mean? Like Jay's house is always the same. You know what I mean? Everything is in his life, particularly when you added businesses on top of it.
Yeah. You know,
because I think other than him, because it's impossible not to see, a lot of us downplay what we do in a day. You know, you don't even mean to, but you don't think of it. You know, like I don't think of the fact that I work 7 days a week.
Right.
It's just life. So the joke for me is people say, what days? I'm like, I don't know. I don't work. But the answer is actually I work every day. So it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. I forget when all that, like the only reason I remember the stat holidays is because someone at the gym will be like, are you guys open this Monday?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah, right. It's a long weekend, but they're never, they're all the same to me.
Yep. For sure.
There's something I liked about, you know, I don't want to spend the whole episode talking about James's episode.
We should.
My favorite thing was when he said that, you know, about people coming together and how you can be stronger together and what happens when you unify people. And so, you know, I started thinking about that aspect of that question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when another reason why I chose the time in Australia as my answer is because, you know, I was only 19 when I went there, 19 to 22, you know, that range in there. And, people were so fucking awesome to me. Like, I had people just like immediately offer, oh, just come stay with me for a month till you find a place. Like, I had that stuff all the time. The guy at the gym was like, oh, just, you know what? You're from Canada. You're backpacking. Just, you train for free because you got to train here. This is where all the bodybuilders are. I don't want you paying. You're already paying for, you know, your backpackers. You're trying to find a job. And then, you know, someone at the gym's like, hey, I know a guy who runs a security company. I'll get you a job with them. And then, like, all of a sudden, someone's like, oh, I got you enrolled for your security license. And they're picking me up and driving me to the class to have to take, because to be a bouncer over there, you have to get, like, a license.
Right.
So then someone from the gym's driving me to this class. And then I've got my license. And then someone else from the gym gets me a job. And then John says, why don't you come and live with me and train with me? And, oh, yeah, I've got another car, and you can just drive that car if you need to.
And like, whoa.
Like, that experience, people were so generous to me and helpful, right, that I couldn't help but, like, go, whoa, this is how you're – this is – when you treat people like this, this is how it makes them feel.
Right.
And then they go and, like – and, you know, I tried to deeply show appreciation for everything too. So that sort of then – you know, gets into you, and you maybe try to treat people.
Oh, for sure.
That way, yes, somehow. That
pay it forward thing without even
pay it forward thing.
Internalize it. Yeah.
I was just really fortunate then, and people were just like obscenely helpful. And the bodybuilding community, mm-hmm, was almost all of those people. Right. There was just a small number that I met outside the bodybuilding community, and then they were super cool. So it was just like, you know, sort of. You see what treating people that way and being generous and being helpful and going out of your way, you know, like, you know, someone who's new to the area and and you know, a guy that might hire them, like, fucking make the call, like,
yeah,
that sort of shit. And when you do that for people, it you know, I like to think it's a bit of a contribution to the great project that we're all involved in.
For sure. No, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I thought that was really, when he was explaining, it's funny, James is like you, he's a good storyteller. So you find yourself, even though we're on a show, seeing it. Like, I'm literally envisioning some, yeah, like him when he was saying, when he was tired and people were like giving them his energy to finish. I could like see it in my head. You know what I mean?
I could see him taking protein out of other people's meals and putting it into their meals.
Scooping it into their bowl.
Like, you don't need that beef. I'm just going to take the beef.
That's fucking class. That definitely made me laugh. I was like,
love that it. Did give me an image, that one, that part of the story.
That's gold. Oh, good shit.
Well, we got a ton of questions and stuff. Do you want to hit them?
Absolutely. I have a ton. So, and I know you do too. So just toss one out. Let's keep going.
Okay. it says here, well... So here's a good question. Let's do a contest prep one off the bat. It said, in what situations, now this is going to be a bit of a complex one, but we'll try to do our best. Mm-hmm. In what situations should diuretics be used and when should they be avoided? And that question is from the big man, Morgan Mack Bodybuilding, from The Rock, big Canadian bodybuilder. You got to follow him. So in what situations should diuretics be used and when should they be avoided?
I mean, it's a broad question for me, but I find, I guess what I'll answer is, diuretics should be avoided when you're trying to diuretic your way out of the fact that you're not in shape.
So when you need them most, don't use them.
Yeah. I mean, I look, because I see guys do that, and they're like, oh, well, I took this and this, and I'm like, but it doesn't take away fat.
Yeah.
So being ultra dry and still out of shape... Well, it's just it's understanding the difference. It doesn't do anything. You know what I mean? Like, no, realistically. You just
wind up usually looking fat and flat.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And there's nothing worse than fat.
It's like highlighting your weaknesses.
Yeah, so as far as the not being in shape thing, I sometimes almost think those guys, you just got to like, okay, well, how full can you get?
Yeah. Because got to make you bigger, because going the other way fucks us.
Because, like, you know, at least get that gym look.
Right.
Like, because, you know,
the vascular, maybe.
Yeah, you know, the guys that are, like, not quite there, they just might as well come in full as fuck, because you're not in shape and diuretics aren't going to get your glutes ripped. And, you know, like, it's almost that sometimes. You think maybe they would have done better if they would have just fucking come in at, you know, come in at 280,
blown out. Yeah. No, I think, though, with diuretics, what's tricky is, And I've taken some heat for this before, but I see coaches online. And if there's someone I know, I tend to be harder on people I know. Like if you said something like this, I would absolutely publicly be like, what the fuck? A guy was like, yeah, I just laid out his diuretic protocol. And I'm like, on a Monday? You know what's happening this weekend on a Monday. Holy fuck. You're amazing. You know what I mean?
Right.
In fact, I just had a girl today message me that I'm getting ready on a short notice prep. He's like, oh, I forgot to ask you what we're doing with the water process at the end. I'm like, don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No clue.
I have no idea. And even when even when we do a diuretic, it's like I really speckle them in. I'm known to get really wild and do like a half a diazide.
Yeah, that's all I use.
And then half, you half see diazide. Them the next day and you're like, oh, we're good. Yeah. I mean, I think people really swing for the fences. And then the other thing is their choice of diuretics. I mean, when I hear the word Lasix, I'm like, do you understand how that works? 6 hours of looping. So guys will literally turn around, they take a diuretic, 4 hours later, like, so are they doing anything? And they take another one. I'm like, it hasn't started yet.
Yeah, they don't wait for things to half life out of them. I have to get my charger. I pulled a Dusty.
Oh shit. I'm on the show alone now. Ron doesn't know. He's got his clothes. See, this is what I mean, guys. Look in the background. That wouldn't happen. I wouldn't have that stuff back there. It would never. It would already be put away. Okay, he's back.
Not a bad recovery time.
I feel good about that, and I didn't mention your clothes hanging behind you on that thing.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I know.
We'll edit that out for sure.
We just had the house cleaner over, actually.
Nice. Did you smell that when you walk into the house?
It was pretty nice. It was pretty nice.
That's something new you're doing.
It's 950 square feet, this condo, so it's just too much for two people to clean. I mean,
fuck right, yes.
Gotta have someone come over and really get the corners that I can't reach, you know?
You're not going to do it like them anyways. I literally, on one of my videos this weekend, a whole conversation about this.
Yes.
It's also stuff. I like to come home on a Wednesday, and when I'm approaching my front door, I smell the cleanliness. I'm like, Alicia was here. God, I love her.
So, back, I was going to say, you used the word speckle in the diuretics. Yeah. I think that the general rule is less is definitely more.
For sure.
And
And if you're not sure, don't do it.
Yeah, if you're not sure, don't do it. You have to remember that people can die from diuretics. You're not a fucking doctor. They might lose certain electrolytes faster than other people. They might do a little bit of something, and all of a sudden they're cramping up really bad. And one of the crazy things that still sort of happens is I hear people saying that they're cramping up. And I'm like, well, did you have some salt and some water?
Yeah, did you have potassium and magnesium?
Did you have some electrolytes? Did you have some calcium, some magnesium? Did you put some like electrolytes in? Because it's calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium. Like,
yep.
Something's not right.
Yeah.
And usually some sea salt in a little bit of water, bang. Usually fixes everything.
Yep.
And people are just so afraid to put any amount. Like, I don't really cut people dry on water anymore either. Like, they're usually sipping with their meals to get their food to process. And so I don't know.
Chris worded that out for me once, because it was, I mean, shit, we're talking 10 years ago now. My first word with Chris 9 years ago. I asked him about the water, because we drank water with every meal. And I was like, well, you know, why? And he's like, well, the obvious, of course, is moving the carbs. But the less obvious was his theory is the reason his guys never sweat. There's a little water in them that's cooling their body. Versus if you're just so dry and nothing in you, the first step for heat is water that you don't have. So it's going to pull it from the muscle. You sweat. Now you're sweating and you're flattening out simultaneously.
Yeah, and usually when they start to sweat, that's an electrolyte problem happening.
And then you're fucked.
Off the bat. So it's usually not. People are like, oh, I wasn't dry, I was sweating. It's like, well, actually, that means your electrolytes were screwed up.
Yeah, I had that working with a guy just trying to make weight, an extreme drop to 212, where we had to figure out how to get it right. Because the push from 225 this morning to 212 at weigh-ins.
Oh, fuck.
Because he was peeled out of his mind at 225, but not big enough to be an open. He's a pro.
I hate doing that.
So, the last time he did it is the last time he's going to do it.
Yeah.
Because it was one of those things where after multiple attempts, there was nothing we could do to match the electrolytes so he wouldn't sweat.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't fix it in a day.
We weren't using diuretics to do it. We're using saunas, cardio, alcohol in the tub, just soaking. And then you soak in there for 20 minutes, molten hot. And then you get out, but you don't dry off. And just let the body stay on fire and keep going. But the electrolytes would be just wrecked. So it was,
yeah, yeah.
There's no way to know which ones were which. I mean, you dump 13 pounds in 4 hours. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
And you're on stage tomorrow.
Yeah. I hate doing those big drops because it's, you know, getting someone to look great again. Sometimes they drop all that weight and they're still just hard looking and peeled. Yep. And then it's when you pull that much off someone and then they look flat, it's like, ah, fuck, you know, but it's not a pleasant thing. And that's why he'll never do it again.
Yeah.
You're taking a risk. Like fighters have died. Boxers have died. Mm-hmm. Saunas, guys have died in saunas. I mean, it's happened. And, you know, fuck, man.
You got to be wired pretty fucked up. I mean, I remember when he would go do his cardio, I would go down with him.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to watch. Like, all right, we're good, I think.
Right.
He hasn't died yet, but if he does, I can probably fix it. So.
Right.
Hey, guys. Why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
Do you want to do one or want me to do another one?
Actually, I got one that's cool. It's not. It's more opinion, but I like it, so I want to hit with it. Part A, do you think Phil Heath will compete again? If so, will he win the Olympia?
I think if Phil Heath competes in the Olympia, he's probably my pick to win it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say, is if he does the 2020 Olympia, he might be my pick to win it.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that 100%.
assuming whatever he had to have fixed is fixed.
Yeah, no, I agree 1,000,000%. And to be honest, I think he could win even if he didn't get it fixed.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think people realize how nuts Phil is. And I think if he came back, he's angry. Yes. And I'm not betting against a pissed off Phil Heath. It's kind of like in 08 when Jay lost, and then people were like, oh, no, not. Yeah, I see him in fourth, sixth. I'm like, wow. How are you going to piss him off? Yeah, and when he walked out in 09, everyone realized, oh, he was pissed off.
Right. No, that's totally true. That's kind of what I think. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I totally do. I don't know if Phil will compete again. The only reason I say that is if Phil competes at the Olympia, it's for his own personal reasons, because I really do believe financially it's a bad decision. And I know people are confused by that because they're like, well, $400,000 or whatever he wins. But if he's focusing on his business and with his reach and his following, I can promise you, like, for example, Jay is making more money off of bodybuilding now than when he was winning the Olympia.
Yeah, that's very possible still.
You know, so I think Phil, from watching him, and he knows this, I used to have an issue with him. I just never liked the way he carried himself. I always thought he was kind of a shit. And then over the years, I've watched him change and grow, and I think some of it's like, well, you know, I was a mediocre bodybuilder to start. I stayed a mediocre bodybuilder, and you climb your way up, and you get a little notoriety at a time. He went from no one knows him to holy fuck, who is that, to Mr. Olympia in 5 minutes. It's like a celebrity that gets rich overnight. Well, now what? How do you handle all that at once? So I think in hindsight, it was easy to judge because I don't have his path. And now seeing him evolve, I'm like, I'm impressed. You know what I mean? I really think that whatever altered him has altered him for the better. And I think now, you know, he's thinking about his life and he's like, this path is going to make me a fortune and set me, and if they choose to have kids or whatever, up for life, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's kind of like Kai, you know what I mean? The answer would be why. Why should I do it? And he might do it just because he's like, fuck it, I want to win 9. And if I was him, I probably would because I'm an egomaniac. I'm like, I'm going to win 9.
Yeah. Okay. I got one here that I think you'll like.
Yeah.
Impossible to really answer it, but it's from Howie K. What percent of people lie about cheating on their diet in their check-ins?
Percent is impossible, but the answer is a lot. I can always tell. Now, mind you, and I'll get your perspective on this, but when I say cheat is anything, missing a meal is cheating to me. Not right. getting water is cheating for me. So when I see something and it doesn't make sense, something happened. Now, it could just be stress, but something happened that I don't know about. Because, you know, I hate when people go, oh, I gained 8 pounds. I'm like, no, nope.
It doesn't make any sense.
Like 3, sure, you've got shit happens. But, yeah, I would say it's pretty decent. I hate to say this, but I think Chris, I know, will side with you on this. I've never had a guy cheat, or I should say, my most hardcore guys never told me they were hardcore. They never told me they would do whatever it takes. They never said, I'm a fucking beast. They just said, what do I need to do? I do find a lot of the guys who are overzealous about how they'll do whatever it takes, especially if they've never done it before, find out quickly that, holy fuck, this is hard.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. There's certain clients that every time they send pictures, there's an improvement. Mm-hmm. Every time they send their weight, it's done kind of what I thought it was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is a definite calmness about receiving their photos because I definitely know that they're following the plan
mm-hmm.
to as much of a T as they can, at least, because they're getting the results I'm expecting.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's frustrating when someone isn't changing or isn't dropping weight, you know, because I know some coaches might be really hard-nosed and just come right out, did you eat a fucking pizza? You know,
right.
But I was kind of giving them a chance to tell me, I'm like, how's training going? What would you rate yourself? You give yourself a score, 1 to 10 on your diet. You know, how have your workouts been? Just try to, you know, get them to tell you what's going on. And then the funny thing is that I'm pretty calm and laid back. If someone tells me what they did, if they're like, hey, man, I got to tell you, on Monday, I ate a giant cookie and then I did 45 minutes of panic cardio.
Right.
I'm just super calm about it. I'm like, okay. Well, you realize that was a waste of your energy and a giant
amount of stress. Ate the cookie and didn't do that, but go ahead.
Or just, you know, just like, Try to remember that it was a waste of your like mental and emotional energy to exert all that stress about eating the cookie and then actually adding the cardio and then the guilt that you probably had till you went to bed. That whole thing could have just been skipped.
Yeah.
Just don't
eat the fucking cookie.
Just don't eat the cookie. Like, it's just easier if you just don't eat the cookie. So just try to remember that. And I'm usually pretty calm. Like, you know, I think it's only a couple of clients that I've tried to make them cry or something. I don't know.
But she deserved it. She was.
Yeah, she really mean. Deserved me. Yeah, she.
No, I
you
think,
know what I'm saying.
No, I totally do. But I have told people up front, especially if they're newer to bodybuilding, I need you to tell me this stuff, and not so I can yell at you. I'm not your fucking dad. But yeah. I can't fix it or try to adjust if I don't know. Because on the flip, Ron, one thing I worry about more than anything, I got you on a diet, super low calories. You don't tell me you ate a cheeseburger and fries last night. You send your progress pictures today and you look full and blown out. I'm like, fucking right, keep going. But I don't know that yesterday morning you were a pancake and looked like shit. So if I get that info, like, hey, dude, I'm sorry, I had a cheeseburger and fries last night. I'm like, all right, get back on the diet, get your water up, and I need pictures in 2 days because I need to know what you probably looked like yesterday. Because right now I don't know. You know what I mean? And that's one of the things that people don't realize is, yes, it is possible in some phases of prep where that cheat meal hurt us because you looked better. And if I don't know about it, I'm like, cool, man, that fucking 0 grams of carbs I got you on. You're not even flat. Fuck it. Let's keep going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You must not go flat.
Yeah, you don't need it. It's fine.
Okay, I'll do one more, and then you can go.
Shoot.
This is from the Big Jape. What was the biggest challenge you both faced going into your first show? I know mine. Go, you want to think about yours?
Yeah, do yours.
My first show, my biggest challenge was that it was a pretty steep learning curve about the tan.
For you, that makes sense.
The training was fucking fun and easy. I killed that prep. My first show, I was like a hungry lion. I was just smashing fucking crazy weights and dieting like a just robot. And, you know, I was just, I'm going to win. Like, I was just such an aggressive kid when I did my first show. I was like going to win, you know? But then when I went on stage in the morning and everyone's like, do you have tan on at all? And I'm like, yeah, I have like 3 bottles of ProTan on. They're like, you're not dark enough at all.
You needed
like,
oh, 12.
And I wound up putting on like a whole tub of Dream Tan.
Right.
Back in the day. And then, and it was funny because I brought a bottle of Dream Tan back from Australia.
For whatever reason.
Because they were all using it there. And my buddy gave me one. He said, you might need this. And I had it. But I remember thinking it looked like a mess to put on. And I remember talking to people. Talking to people here, and no one was using it yet. Everyone's like, oh, no, you don't use that here. You just get, like, just use a lot of ProTan. Yeah. So I was like, okay. So I used a bunch of ProTan, went on stage in the morning. Everyone's like, you're white as fuck. And so I pulled the Dream Tan out, and I started putting it on, and everyone, like, at the night show.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone backstage was like, what is that? I was like the first guy to use Dream Tan where I'm from.
Right.
And I put it on, and everyone's like, the fuck, and I packed it on
instant.
And I like, because I knew I wasn't dark enough, and I got someone to do my back, and I told them how to pat it in and like all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then I went on stage at night and like looked great, and everyone was like, holy fuck. And then the next year when I came back to compete again, everyone was using Dream Tan. It had infiltrated like the whole bodybuilding world.
Right.
So Australia was kind of like before Canada for Dream Tan. I don't know when you guys saw it down there. I don't know when it showed up in the States at any point. Yeah. But, and then of course it got, you know, banned and all that stuff. No one uses it over here anymore. But that was my funny tanning story, which was my number one challenge, because it really like hurt me on stage. Like the more pictures from the morning, I fucking so white.
fucking opaque. So I would say my biggest stress was I was working with JJ Marsh for my first show. Which 90s pro, awesome freak. But I hired him because a friend of mine said, if you want to appeal, this is who you use. And I hired him for money that was out of my league. So I was stressed financially the entire prep. But I wanted him. And the good part of the stress was I'm already wired to be perfect in execution. But because he was letting me pay him over time, I was extra, like, I got to do whatever it takes. You know what I mean?
Right.
And anybody who knows JJ from around here knows he's a brutal person. I was with him, actually, when I was prepping for that show. A guy came in, you'll love this, getting ready to do USA's. And it's like, I don't know, a week out. And he's like, Jay, I want you to come in and take a look at me and tell me what you think. So we go in the locker room, and he runs his shots, and the guy's like, Jay just sat there quietly. He goes, what do you think? And Jay goes, you really want to know? And he says, yeah. He goes, I think you should quit the sport. And I was like, are they going to get a fist fight right now? Like, it's a week out from the USA's. So this is who I'm working with. It's that hardcore.
I think you should quit the sport.
Yeah. So, but what was funny about it was, and so everybody knows my point is that he's just a brutal person. And then one day we're dieting, or we're doing legs, and I could tell he was trying to get me to quit. Like I really thought his goal was to get me to quit. So long story short, I was like, fuck you, I'll die. Let's do this. But I started to get mad because I was getting tired. And I barely squeaked out on a squat press, like 20 reps or something. I get done, and I mean, it was like I needed a spot to get to 20. And he goes, all right, add a plate. And I go, well, fuck it. We should add 2. And he goes, okay. I'm like, fuck. Like, why are you talking shit right now? So we end up, I squeaked those out, and then next thing we were doing was hack squat. And long story short, I got a rep where I came up and it started to go back down. And even with his help, it went down. And I got up and I sat there for about 30 seconds. And I was like, I looked at him, I go, well, should I just try to get under it and finish? And he looks at me and goes, how much money do you owe me? And I knew, because I think he charged like $3,000. I was like, $1,256. You know what I mean? He looks at me and goes, you don't owe me any more money.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? And he goes, if you're willing to train like this, I really don't need your money. It's fine. I remember thinking to myself, like, don't cry. Don't cry. Don't cry.
Because I'm so broke. Fucking broke.
Yeah. You are broke. And he just saved you a mortgage payment. Because I owned a house at that point already, too. So it was like, okay, that's my mortgage. Like, right. You know, yeah. So yeah, that was a scary thing. I get that question a lot from people is, what is your advice? If you really want to take bodybuilding far, my answer is always get a good career.
Yeah, you got to make some money. You got to be able to afford to do it.
Yeah, because I wasn't making no damn money when I was doing it. So.
Yeah. You want to hit one?
Yep. I got a chun. Okay, so up next. That's easy. Oh, there's a good one. Do you believe in flexible dieting?
Oh, well, I mean, the shorter answer is yes, but like, what's your goal?
Mm-hmm.
I think that the whole, if it fits your macros, flexible dieting thing,
mm-hmm.
it was all just marketing terms and just language being changed. That's all it was. Everyone's really been doing that for a long, long time. I mean, we're always aware of I've always been aware of my grams of carbs. I've always been aware of what my intake is. I've always been like, you know, I remember 20 years ago thinking I need 50 grams of carbs at this meal, mm-hmm. you know, and be like, well, I don't have any rice right now. It's two pieces of toast. That's 50 grams of carbs. Like,
right.
I remember doing that in the off season. Like, you know, it's not a new thing. I mean, you should be able to be dynamic and flexible so that you can stick to your diet.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, you want to be in a routine. That's why I do like meal plans for someone who's doing a show. I think you should stick to a meal plan, get your body in a groove, and then when you make changes, you know exactly what's going on. You know, if you're eating white rice at all your meals and you fucking change to fucking sweet potato and all of a sudden you're more tired or something, like, just then at least you know what's going on. There's a lot of things that you can learn and pay attention to when you're sticking to a meal plan. But yeah, flexible dieting, obviously, like, if you're on the road and you have to eat, I mean, a day die, like, figure it out. And so if something's gone wrong and you don't have your meal or what the fuck, like, you just, of course I believe in flexible dieting. It's not a new thing. It's just like knowing what you're doing.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm not going to bother answering the question because the question, of course, is yes. But I think where there was a big pushback from educated bro dieters, as they call it, is some of these guys on the flexible dieting side were trying to sell it as if it was an easier way to do it.
Yeah, like you could just...
And the next thing you know, it was like, we're eating way more calories than those guys. Like, no, you're not. And the majority of people I knew that were very, very successful, can't speak with my sore throat, dieters...
I like the word successful better.
It tells you where my brain is.
You just invented a word. It's a dusty...
Words don't owe me. They don't
dusty
owe me.
Dusty Hanshaw is a very successful individual.
He is, depending on the time of year. Yes. But... what they would end up running into is by the time they were at the lowest part of the diet, what are you eating? Fish and green beans. Oh, me too. You know what I mean? Because that's how fucking low the calories were. It was the only
in my case, it would be egg whites. I did I remember the egg white diet. If my calories had to get low, I got into the egg whites big time.
Yep. You're like, fuck it, here we go. Hey, so I got a really good question just now. This one actually came up on our YouTube.
Oh.
So here we go. Guy says, I agree with your point, Dusty, about waiting until competitive and in contention at the national level to compete at that level. However, do you think there is any value to a person doing a national level show to compete, understand they will most likely not place well, just to get experience, humbled, and see real life on stage what it takes to be a competitor at the national level? is that experience worth something, or is it more a person by person case where it depends on how much, how they absorb that experience, and whether being humbled will make them go back to work harder, or whether it may actually end up being detrimental?
Well, I think the answer is right there in his explanation of his question. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know there's people I've helped for nationals where I knew they weren't going to win anything, but man, did they enjoy that experience. And they come back from the show with their eighth place. I got top 10 and they're super fucking happy. Like, man, that was the funnest show I ever did. And they're all like it's, you know, it's what they take out of it. And, mm-hmm. and I've helped people for nationals that got their ass kicked, but it was super rewarding prep because right. they like got it, came in at their best ever, even though they got their ass kicked, they were their best ever and they were super happy and all that stuff. And then I've helped some fucking miserable people that did really well, but man, was it a drag. It's not always the funnest just because they're good, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it's like, it is all about the experience. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is value for some people. For a guy like me who had my mindset, I mean, there's nothing valuable about, you know, in my mind, there was no value in getting my ass kicked at nationals, right?
Right.
It's like, let's just skip that part. Yeah. And go when I won't get my ass kicked, you know? So, but that was just because I was, you know, trying to be a pro and my all focused on that. So, you know, like I say, sometimes my master's clients, like there's a certain genre of client. And one of my favorites is the master guy who's like wife is going to let him do a show.
Right.
And he's fucking been waiting for this show. He wanted to do one at back in the 90s, but then he was busy with his company, and then he had three kids, and now the wife's like, "Hey, you can do a show." That genre of client is usually a lot of fun because they fucking love it.
Yeah,
and he knows
that this they're is in it because they love it. This is Olympia.
Yeah, and also too, like that's it's for them. Like,
yep,
you know, like they get to do it. You know,
no, I feel that. That would be me if I ever qualified for the Olympia.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean. I would go into that prep like a fucking warrior, also wondering what last place was just so I would know where I was going to land.
So how many guys are in the show?
So I can say top 15 because there's only 15?
Yes. Yeah, top 18.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that 100%. Like I had no interest. I mean, I'm not wired to that. Like I can't go into something that way. And I actually have been, and I know, hell, you were at one of the shows that I did. I think it was 11 or 12 when we did North Americans. I think you might have been standing there with me. We were sitting there, it was four of us just chatting, Akeem, me, and two other guys. And this kid walked up. We hadn't walked on stage yet, and he was a super. And he walked over, and he goes, I mean, just blank face. He goes, "What do you guys do?"
You were eating like, a Pop-Tart.
Like, because he was just confused knowing that he won and he was super, and it was like, I was like, do you not have an internet connection? Like, you didn't know what you were getting into. I mean, you felt bad because, you know, he was out of shape to be over 225, and he's standing there with Akeem Williams and Michael Lockett, and like going, oh, what the fuck, you know? So I mean, I don't think he came back.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't think it's always valuable, but definitely a cool question. Like you said, it's person to person. I think people who are there to turn pro really don't have a value for that.
Yeah. I got a off. Let's change directions here. I've got one here.
Pulp Fiction. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. It's and Fun 73. Who is your favorite superhero?
Ooh. My favorites. It's a tough one. See, because now I'm breaking down Marvel and DC to decide who is a superhero.
Right.
I'm like, shit. I mean, I gotta go boring, you know? I mean, I guess because I'm not hugely into it. I'm a different type of nerd. So I would be Superman, you know what I mean? Just it's the most basic superhero I can possibly think of, but it clicks with me. You know,
it's funny because I was a comic book kid, but right. as an adult, I don't pay any attention really to superhero movies. But
yeah, Luke Sandow actually just unfollowed our page because of my answer. Actually, watched him.
John Meadows is wearing his Juggernaut shirt, and he's going, "You don't know who this is." No, I was always a huge Batman fan. Right. Batman was like, I grew up on the old Batman TV show and every single Batman movie and all that stuff. Batman was my guy. And then I remember the Batman versus Superman movie was one of my least favorite superhero movies ever. I fucking hated it. I thought it sucked. The whole premise was like Superman could just kill him.
Right.
Like in like a second with lasers coming out of his fucking eyes. Why are they? Right. There's no fight. Yeah. It's just, you're dead. Okay.
We're done now.
It's over. What a dumb fucking movie that was.
Oh, God.
Everything so about it sucked.
Who is the best Batman then in the movies?
Christian Bale.
Of course. Okay.
Of
course we agree.
He was just perfect. He just did such a fucking great job. As far as the campy Batmans that were all before that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you watch the first one again, Michael Keaton's awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
And I like George Clooney too. He did a good job, even though his movies were just like campy bullshit, ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
They were just ridiculous. You know what I mean? I remember Arnold as Mr. Ice, like just Mr. Freeze, terrible, terrible, terrible shit. But you know,
I love it. You're actually getting irritated as you're answering.
Those movies were like those movies were just such a reminder of how much money can be wasted on shit.
Oh, sure.
You know? Yeah, that's you go ahead with
one. I got a good one here. This is actually from my client. It was funny because he goes, he texts me, fucking Box won't give me enough letters, so here's the question for the show. He texts me.
Okay.
He says, we hear about certain pros that, quote, don't have to train as hard as others to grow, like, for example, Phil Heath. Do you think had some of these pros trained progressive overload, it would have benefited or hurt them? And you've already answered the progressive overload portion of this, but being more specific, if he were to train or those guys were trained like we do with a fucking logbook and thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say because mm-hmm. I think that there's – how do I put this? I think it's pretty arrogant of me to look at Phil's physique and tell him that I know better.
Right.
And yes, genetics are a massive. Well, genetics are, I had this conversation the other day with someone. People say, well, what role do genetics play? Technically, genetics are absolutely everything. 100% down the line, nothing is really up to you. Nothing. Right. Because even your brain chemistry and your personality and all, a huge portion of that stuff is all genetically related.
Hardwired.
So like we really are absolute victims or lucky bastards depending on our DNA. But the thing is that that's no way that we really like to construct our lives and our thoughts, right? We don't want to just always say, well, my genetics, because then you don't get anything done. The truth is that genetics hold the key for absolutely everything, but you have to move past that and go, okay, well, fine. I got the cards I got. Now I got to play the game as smart as I can with the hand I got, right? Mm-hmm. That's where the magic is. Who knows? Maybe Phil's training perfect for him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he doesn't have the genetics in the tendon department to handle the loads that other guys use, and he's lucky he never tried.
Or longevity.
Like that's kind of what I mean. Like maybe he doesn't have the injury resistance that some guys have. Maybe his muscle is just really responsive to just getting volume stressed. I don't know. Like there's so much we don't really know. We can only go by what we see. And Phil just happens to be an 8-time Mr. Olympia.
You got to factor in is when you're looking at the science of anything, it's over a group.
Mm-hmm.
But there's exceptions to every rule.
The outliers.
And you can't, that's the same thing. I mean, I know you and I have had this conversation many times. You can't have that conversation of, well, Phil Heath didn't need to do that. He's not fucking human. Stop it.
Yeah, he's an outlier.
I have clients that do that all the time. Like, well, and I'm like, dude, you weren't born for this.
Yeah.
But you're doing it fucking anyway. So I'm showing you the best way for you to get there. I could never say to Phil Heath, you know, your ex body part, it could have been better.
Right.
I'm literally, so sitting here when we're talking, I'm like, I can't think of a body part on him that's not the best.
Yeah, no, that's a thing about using him as an example.
Yeah.
But it's another thing about, you know, people sometimes don't realize genetic outliers are sometimes so obvious too. Like, how fast do you think Usain Bolt was when he was 16?
Oh yeah, it would have been silly.
With no formal training whatsoever. 14 years old, how fast do you think he was? I bet people were like, holy shit, that kid can run.
Right? Imagine if he had shoes.
Imagine if he had shoes. Yeah, like, I mean, those are the outliers, and sometimes they're just super fucking obvious. And
yeah, well, that's Phil. I mean, I think people forget, or the young guys, because obviously they came into the sport and Phil was already here, they don't realize that Jay Cutler was guest posing at a Colorado show that Phil was at. And he was like, who the fuck is that? And he wasn't huge.
No, he was only 200 pounds or something.
Flawless. He won the USA's at 213.
Yeah.
And look, I remember, so how about this? I was at Junior Nationals that he did. I was there with clients. And he walked out. I didn't know who he was. So I was like, who the fuck is that? Like, I mean, we're talking about a huge national show with all these great bodybuilders. He walked out. I'm like, well, this is over.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is, crazy. But fuck. And then 6 weeks later, I was at the USA's and he walked out. I'm like, and I know he didn't smoke the USA's actually, but I had the same feeling. I'm like, oh, this is over. Like,
right.
You know, one and done at the USA's. Like, fuck. Yeah. So, but I will say on a further stretch of this question, I do think there are many guys who would have taken it further. If you pull away the genetic outliers and just say the guys who got it done, I think there are a pretty large list of guys whose muscle doesn't have that dense, nasty look that, if programmed correctly, if they knew when to push and when to pull back, would have been better. You know, I mean, I was just today listening to a Dorian Yates interview that I had not heard yet. And he talks about Flex Wheeler, and he was like, he goes, if I was giving bodybuilding 100%, he goes, we'll never know, but let's just say I was truly nailing it 100%. He goes, I think Flex was at 70.
Right.
And it was funny because I love Dorian because he refuses to say yes. But the interviewer asks, if Flex is at 100, would he beat you? And he couldn't say yes because it's just not in him to say he could lose. But he said he would be very hard to beat.
Yeah.
And I think it's true. And he was talking diet and everything. But I think the difference, I mean, I've trained with Dorian after he was retired. I could pretty much bet that he's left no more than 5 reps on a table during his Olympia reign.
Probably.
You know, I mean,
probably if he felt a twinge or something, he put the bar down and that would about it.
Yeah. I mean, and even then, I'm sure based on his tears, he's pushed through a couple of those twinges he shouldn't have. But yeah, so I do think that there is a point where I would not be afraid to argue people could be better, but not the outliers, because it's like,
yeah,
I can't imagine Phil could have been better.
I think another thing to consider with progressive overload too, and why some guys benefit from it, is because take away the actual training program. Progressive overload, the philosophy of it, forces you to put a lot of energy into making sure your workout is, making sure you're focused for your workout, making sure you've thought about it, making sure you've got goals, making sure you've got like a real clear path laid out in front of you. That's mm-hmm. one thing that style of like logbook training does. And even if the training is just as good as other training, the habit of making you, like, you know how many guys just walk in the gym like, oh, I got arms today, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yep.
You can't do that when you logbook.
Nope.
Like, it prevents that. So then every workout has purpose, and that's why they improve. Even if the workout was a different type of workout, they might still improve because they're at least putting like focus and goal setting and all that shit. That's one of the things about progressive overload that sort of permeates into the rest of your bodybuilding.
Yep. Because every day is a win or a loss. Every I always say, I hate when people would say, oh, how was your workout? It was good. I trained hard.
Awesome.
I'm like, hard. What does that mean? How hard? Because it's you can't, you know what I mean? It's not concrete. Whereas progressive overload is like, yeah, I was the strongest I've ever been in my entire life.
Yeah.
On incline bench.
Yeah, or you know something else. You're like, well, I moved my feet a bit on the leg press, but I still got the same number of reps as last week, which yep. is like was surprising.
Yeah,
like, no, I love always that. Have some sort of like information that you can quantify.
Yep, which we, you know? Which I think if you're that kind of nerd like we are, you love it.
Yeah. Okay. I got a this one might be funny for you. I don't know. I got a good story. It's from JD Chap 8746. What was your first ever pre-workout?
My first ever. Jesus. This will show how long it took me to even start taking pre-workouts. My first ever powdered pre-workout was Jacked 3D.
Oh, is that the one?
1-3-dimethyl. Yeah. And of course, that means I started with possibly one of the best ones that was ever made.
Right.
It was essentially who gives a fuck with Adderall mixed in.
Who gives a fuck with some Adderall mixed in? Yeah.
That's why I was drinking blueberry Adderall.
Blueberry Adderall. Oh, okay. It sounds like a good. You know what? The older I get, the better that sounds. My first pre-workout was back.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Oh boy. Here we go.
Do they even have caffeine? Never mind.
No. Yeah. Caffeine. Oh yeah. About 1,000 years into caffeine. So in the early 90s. A product hit the shelves that just took the world by storm. 25, Orange. Not quite. That was the American product, but up here in Canada we didn't have it. But 25 milligram ephedrine tablets.
Yep.
The old they were dimetadrine 25s.
Yep.
And dimetadrine 25s just sort of became a thing suddenly. I don't really remember like who I heard from about them, but everyone was like, oh, bodybuilders take a caffeine and an ephedrine three times a day when they're dieting and an aspirin three times a day when they're dieting. I remember Lee Labrada came out, said it was a great stack, and all the guys at the Olympia were using caffeine, ephedrine, and aspirin. And then everyone else was like, and then in the off season, you just take a pre-workout.
Right.
So I would take a 25 milligram ephedrine with a cup of coffee.
Right.
And go train. And then on leg day, I'd take two.
I fucking love it. 50. You were already a bodybuilder. And on leg day, you take two.
On leg day, I'd take two. So I remember, looking back now, I'm fucking.
Your eyeball was twitching.
I was a speedhead. I didn't even know it. Right. I was taking two ephedrines and then driving to the gym. And by the time I get to the gym, my face would be just dripping. And I'd be like. Like just
let's do this
fucking. And I didn't realize that that's how speed felt. I just thought that was how ephedrine felt.
Which is funny because now, of course, if you did that to me and tell me the gym I'm about to run, we can't train this. I feel like shit.
I'm in a heart attack.
Yeah. Like I can only imagine how hard you would have been breathing after like a set of curls.
Just crazy and just sweating like fucking crazy and going off. And then post workout, I would just crash.
Yeah, of course.
Death, sleep, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was pretty funny to look back on how much ephedrine we took back in the day.
Oh, for sure. I still have guys do it, though.
Yeah, we start, of course, reading, like, 50 milligrams of ephedrine is quite a bit. You shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
You know? That sort of stuff.
Yeah. That's now in the States, we can't even get the shit.
Yeah. Here, you go. You go again.
Perfect. I have plenty. Good news, we have plenty. All right, this one is bum, bum, bum. Okay, it's a good one. Is keeping receptors fresh by coming off or switching esters / compounds real, or is it a myth?
Coming off helps to resensitize androgen receptors.
Yep.
But I don't believe switching esters does anything, because that's not what's attaching to the receptor anyways. It's the, like, if you take testosterone cypionate and then you change to propionate, it's not the ester that attaches to the receptor, it's the testosterone.
Yep.
The ester, that the mixing the ester things up is like, it's fun, but it doesn't really do anything. But coming off certainly resensitizes you.
Yeah, no, I love the way you said that, just because that's back to the can't be combining your master on with. Because sorry guys, we had a little conversation before we went on, but
switching up compounds entirely can bring up bring like sort of a new sort of gain that can happen. Like if you're running, you know, two items and you switch to two totally different items, not just esters,
right?
That can change things, obviously, but the ester thing is sort of overplayed.
Yeah, I think that some of that now is overcomplicate, so you look really smart, so people hire you.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the coaches that haven't figured out yet that winning gets you hired. my people like to win. Okay, this is from me directly, but you can utilize the same thing with your sports. He asked, what lessons did you take from hockey and implement into bodybuilding?
Good one.
And for me, this is actually life in general, which is, I think what might have been in me, but got hardwired from hockey was that was effort. If you were disciplined all the time, you got the greatest result. You know, I was able in hockey, unlike bodybuilding, to ride off of talent a little bit. But I remember the year that I went to camp out of shape. And I still made the team, obviously, and I was, you know, still me. But I remember feeling exhausted. I remember having to do things and being like, oh, shit. And I never did that again. And then I would remember laughing in my head at the guys who did, especially the guys who didn't have my talent already. Because it's like, well, now I'm better than you and I'm outworking you. You're never going to be me.
Right.
And that transferred into bodybuilding and in life in general. I've just found very simple things. I mean, it's like that Elon Musk thing. If I work 80 hours a week and you work 40, I will beat you.
Right. Yeah.
It's just the amount of time I'm going to put into my craft versus you.
Yeah.
And I believe that 100%. So, which was a part of James's interview that we did not get to cover because we just didn't have time. But he was a prime example because, you know, he turned pro. He's been bodybuilding for forever, and he realized that he was bodybuilding 6 months out of the year. So he said, fuck it. I'm going to bodybuild for 12 months out of the year, and I'm going to treat my off season like a prep. And it always blows people away because they will ask him, man, what was the secret? What did you do different this year? And his answer is, I was bodybuilding 12 months out of the year. I ate my fucking food. I did my fucking training. I got my rest. And, oh, shocking. I had double the time to become better, and I got twice as good.
Right, anyway. Right. Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good one. And as far as your answer about hockey, I guess like I played football, and there was a lot of similar sort of stuff that comes out of that. But I think the thing that football taught me, and I was already doing it in martial arts beforehand, but football really galvanized it, was turning on that switch where I'm going to murder someone and it's not going to be a crime because it's a football game.
Right.
Like that absolute no, I have no feelings or mercy whatsoever for the other players on this field.
Right.
Like they're choosing to be on this field with us and we're going to make them fucking regret it. And if they go home with casts and broken bones and injuries that last them the rest of their lives, that's their story to tell their kids.
Right.
Because this is a football game. And we were big farm kids. We had this huge defense. We were the big school and all the other schools around us were small schools. So we usually had like a really good team.
Right.
We used to play teams and like, we played a team one time. Oh, fuck. They showed up. Canadian football's 12-man ball.
Right.
They showed up with 15 players. And we didn't finish the game.
Because they ran out of players.
By the third quarter, they only had 11.
Right.
So the game was over. That's how we played football. And and I'm not saying that that's a good way to live your life. And hurting people's not fun. But the reality is, you're responsible for the situation you put yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
this is how the game's played. I'm allowed to hit you a certain way. If your body breaks, that's your problem.
If he dies, he dies.
If he dies, he dies. But, and it's like I said, it's not like that's what matters. It's the flipping the switch and just putting yourself through it and also taking the responsibility. Like, I might get hurt.
Yep.
Like the other guys on the other team, that it might be my day where I am the one who gets fucking creamed and my fucking arm gets busted or my knee gets taken out. Like, you're also accepting that yourself too. So it's a personal responsibility, realizing that there's a risk, willing to take it, and then not worrying about it at all while you're doing it.
Right. No, for sure.
That's like, you can't be on the field worried about your knee.
That's the dark side of the, you know, if you ever read Tim Grover's books, he talks about that. Like, it's tapping into that dark side of your psyche and being able to play there. And it's always there. And it's the reason that guys like you and me and probably all the men and women listening to this have to have something. That dark side's always there. You can't stop playing football and just go work 9 to 5. Unless you're going to go work Wall Street, because then slitting their throats is your dark side.
Right.
You know
right.
what I'm saying? Like, there's something that becomes in you. And when you have that, it has to be unleashed in some way. And that's how I ended up in bodybuilding, was because when it was over with hockey, I was like,
I'm going to have to either train or punch somebody.
Yeah, something is going to happen. I mean, this is not good. But one thing you said something that actually was an interesting, it did like a ding in the back of my head. So when I played hockey, I was obviously younger. I didn't know how to flip that switch in myself. I loved to play the game. I was talented. But if something would happen that would piss me off and flip me into that, it was an aggressive rage, but I couldn't do it myself. So if something happened, if I would even have words with my coach, I remember as I got older realizing he would do it on purpose. Because he was trying to find the button, and it was a moving button. Because it had to be real. I had to actually be fucking angry to find it. And then right. when you get older, and like you said last week, when it becomes a skill, it's right. like, oh, I need to do this now. Touch the button. Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's exactly it.
It's just it's an interesting thing, because that's not something I took from hockey. It's something that was there, but only if someone else would call on it. You know what I mean? Or, you know, if someone would, as they say, was it push the bear or whatever that's called? Like,
poke the bear.
Poke the bear, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's what we're going to do. Okay.
Right.
But I wasn't able to do that myself. So it is interesting how things can evolve. And I think that's why with training people, if one, like your training partner, you're finding that button for him so much faster because you're in there and he finishes the set and you're like, you weren't done.
Right.
Yeah. Or you won't even let him rack it. Like, oh no, no.
Yeah. And hands then off. You see it evolve. you see it evolve. And then now there's like sets where I'm telling him, you better rack it. This is getting
stop.
This is,
yeah.
The next rep's going to be too sketchy for me to take care of, you know? So, so then that's where he will learn the skill.
Yep, exactly.
Managing that. Cause you know, you got to know how to push, but you also have to know like, oh, that's where my reps are looking shitty.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
I just did that last week with Matt. He went down and he pulled up a rep, and literally on the way down, I go, done. And he stopped. And he puts it down and he goes, I was going for one more. I'm like, I know. And I wasn't letting you.
that's funny. What do we want to do here? I mean, there's training, there's not training.
If you got solid bodybuilding ones, let's hit a couple because we're running low on time. And I always feel like I want to make sure we, as much as I love getting into the other shit, if we've got something that's valuable, we got to give it.
Well, this one might be good conversation. I mean, I'm gonna throw it out there. Sure. It's from Ricky Fitness, and it says, "How do you deal with depression and anxiety in bodybuilding and in general?" So, I don't really think I suffer from depression or anxiety generally. So right. I don't really think I have a problem with either one of those things. Anxiety to me is just sort of like, I don't really feel like I have anxiety. I just have like constant stress smashing down on me, crushing me into the fucking ground. I just call it life. 7 days a week, my phone won't stop. But no, I mean, do you have anything to say about that? Because I know you've spoken about that a little bit more than me.
That was something I actually learned this year, so which is crazy at my age to be learning something. But the long story short of this is, my answer is the reason Ron does not suffer from anxiety and stress the way that I had this year was the intelligence and understanding that you're not in control of everything. When you're someone like me who typically, you know, I always call myself a thermostat. There's thermostats, there's thermometers. I set the temperature, you go to the temperature I set. That's how this works. If I walk into a room, it's now my room. This is what's going to happen. But when you have that mentality, you have to understand that sometimes you aren't in control. Right. So when something is out of your control and then it seems to domino things, when you're that person, if you can't step back and go, nothing I can do, you're fucked. Because you're trying to control something that's not yours. There's just nothing you can do. So my biggest expert advice as someone who's failed miserably at it is you really have to have I call it ego. Like your ego has to kick. You got to kick it to the door. You can't control everything. You have to just look and say, am I controlling what I can control? Cool. Then fuck everything else. Because at the end of the day, when it all hits the floor, then no matter what it is, okay, now I know what I'm dealing with. Now I'm back in control and I can go forward. But when you're trying to control shit that's not yours, that's stress and anxiety and you're fucked. You're not going to win. It's going to bury you.
Right.
You know, so pretty simple. I mean, and I think that really truly covers all stress and anxiety, you know, because I've had things that were much more truly worrisome in my life, but because there were things I could control, it was okay. Like, I mean, prime example, the very first time I started making as a business owner, taxes, I owed more money than I had. And I was like, shit. What do I do? I mean, it was like I froze. And then I did what my type of person does. I called the IRS. I'm like, hey, so I owe you guys $11,000 and I have five. And I'm thinking, they're going to take me to jail. They're going to cut my legs off. You know what I mean? And the lady goes, okay, can you send us the five? I'm like, sure. Okay, how much can you pay a month? And I was like, $1,500. She goes, okay. All right, what day do you want to come out of your account? I'm like, 20 seconds. She goes, okay, see ya. I'm like, that's it? Holy shit. Like, but again, I was in control still because I didn't wait for them to call me. That would have caused stress and anxiety. Yeah. I called them and I was like, oh, you're $7,000 I got. $6,000, whatever it was. And then it became, oh, okay, now I'm back in control. I pay my $1,500 a month and we're done, you know. Right. But some things, you don't get to make the phone call. You just wait for the fucking roof to fall in and then you go, all right, well, thank God I know a roofer. Let's get this thing done.
Okay. I got another good one. You want to go down this path?
Shoot, hell yeah.
Okay, so we got Jesse Chase 2. Now, we could get serious or we could get funny with this one. Maybe we'll try a little of both.
A little of both. Here we go. I'll try to be mature.
How to push through and overcome heartbreak.
Well, nothing gets you over the last one like getting on top of the next one.
Hate to say it.
Sorry, it's true.
I think my best advice is to immediately start banging all the girls at the gym. That's always a healthy thing to do. And never comes back, never causes problems.
Never, never, never in your home gym ever.
Never, never makes everything awkward.
Oh, if you haven't kissed this kid, do not bang the girls at the gym.
So here's where having a second gym membership comes in handy. So you get the second tag. So let's say you're training at your favorite gym, but then there's like, you know, the fancy fitness club.
The Gold's
like,
down the street.
The Gold's down the street. The Good Life or the Lifetime. The Lifetime. Dusty knows about the Lifetimes. They're down the street. They got like 20 step mills in a row. So there's a lot of butts at the same time.
And they have a backboard.
I'm giving away your secrets, Dusty. That's when you go train there, you know, once a week, maybe, you know, just saying.
Fishing with dynamite.
Start, and then now the everyone now got their phone. Like, come on, here's the speech where I go, I had to do things the hard way. I had to go talk to girls. Now you can just be like, oh, the girl on the treadmill over there, I found her on Instagram. Like. Now you just wait.
Just wait. It's so painful how true that is.
Just wait. She's going to see the 3 likes in a row, which is like the bat signal for I want to fuck you. And then she's going to search your Instagram. She's going to go down. And then, of course, you have your post newly announcing your single sort of casually on there somewhere or placed in there.
Strategically locked in.
Strategically. And then, a little friendly banter. And then, I don't know. You tell me the rest, Dusty. I've been in a relationship for 8 years.
I just think that shortly thereafter, you're over your relationship problems. You're into new problems, but the old heartbreak is. The problems are here now, but the relationship is gone.
Right.
Oh, God. Okay. It's painful, but true, because all kidding aside, I mean, I think when you really lock into it, a lot of times, again, with heartbreak is ego. Didn't go the way you wanted it to go. Mm-hmm. And, in reality, you know what's funny is I posted something the other day. I like to put up like deep, weird shit. And I finally had to put something up the other day like, hey, I'm not one of those guys that's like secretly telling you my life story. So I was just like, oh, I saw this. It's fucking crazy. I post it. But a friend of mine said to me something the other day that was pretty cool. He said, the universe will only fuck up your plans if your plans were about to fuck you up. And he said that. I was like, that's some deep shit, dude.
Right.
But damn, it's accurate. Like, there's, I am a weird believer in, in some ways that was not supposed to happen. So fuck it. You know what I mean? And I think when you take on again that thing of like, it is what it is, shit gets a lot easier. And when you're hanging on for dear life or something that for whatever reason is done, you're fucking yourself. You know, go to Lifetime. Get on the step, Mel.
Get on a step hill.
Do what you need to do.
Do what you need to do.
That's terrible.
God. It's the thing about the universe fucking up your plans that you said is we often think that because we want something, it's a good idea.
Yes.
Right. That's where it all lies. We go, oh well, I researched this decision. I looked at the positives and I looked at the cons. Positives outweigh the cons. This is therefore a good idea. But that's based on the fact that you don't really know everything.
Yep.
So your list is incomplete.
Yeah.
So your decision is really kind of a guess. And you're just now emotionally attached to this decision.
Yep.
And then when it goes wrong, obviously it fucking sucks extra bad because you like really were invested in that.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's like I put up song lyrics once in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
On my story, and I put up a Marilyn Manson lyric the other day.
I saw it.
When all your wishes are granted, many of your dreams will be destroyed. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's things that you thought were awesome, and you get them, and you're like, oh fuck, this is not what was on the fucking ad.
Right, yeah. The bait and switch. Why does this burger not look like the one in the picture?
The bait and switch. This is not the life I did not know that this was what was going to happen. And that is just a great quote to remember. Like, just because you wanted something real bad and it didn't work out doesn't mean it's a fail. And like The Rock says all the time, the best thing that ever happened was him getting cut out of the CFL.
Yeah, well, I think you got to have a true the – and you know this, and it's funny, but it's something I used to deal with. I'm successful in business, and you know this part of me, because I have no emotional connection to anything in business. None.
Yeah. Well, that's a lucky place to be, actually.
You know, it's purely money for me. Like, everything I do in business is, what do I need to do? So even with friends, if we have a business thing, I mean, I only have a few friends I do business with, but I've had friends, I mean, I have fired people who hired me for jobs. So, right. I mean, I had a guy hire me for a job. I ended up buying the company and firing him later in life. For most people, that would be this big thing. For me, it was, no, you fired yourself. I just the one who delivered the message. You're not good at your job. Like, I have no emotion to that. Right. But when you switch into the personal life, of course you've got emotion attached. But you have to understand what it's attached to, and also understand that, if you're chasing someone, that means they're running away. Let him go.
Right.
You know, pretty simple thing. You don't chase something that's not moving. So I think that that should help you get out of that connection of emotion and be like, oh, I'm the only one emotionally involved in this.
Yeah.
I'm out. But
another thing too, and I don't mean to sound cynical or heartless or anything like that, because I think, you know, as far as relationships go, you know, finding someone that you can spend a long amount of time with, you know, years and years, and like build an actual relationship with is pretty difficult to begin with.
Yeah.
And nowadays it's way harder. And I mean, all the numbers are showing that like relationships are just,
we're failing way worse.
Yeah. We're failing, like divorce rates are crazy and like blah, blah, blah. And it really does all boil down to, like, you know, they say you're only as loyal as your choices.
Yeah, and your choices are now the whole world.
And your choices are now like half the girls at the gym.
Right.
Because they're right there on, you know, like that's what guys are going through then. That's what girls are going through now. They're getting like all these choices. You know, they like this guy, but this guy's talking to them, and this guy's talking to him, and this guy's talking to him. And there's just so many more choices now. I don't see relationships getting longer or better for the next generation of people. I mean, it's is it just going to be a speed dating world? I don't know what's going
to
happen.
It starts to feel that. Well, plus I think you also factor in, I mean, that it used to be unacceptable to do what's normal now. Like literally at Scottsdale, I will see someone that I know is married with someone else. And I'm like, hey, can I go tanning? I don't even think about it. I'm like, that's not your wife. Anyways, you know, and you see their face.
What are they doing? Are they like,
you know, you see the frozen face like, hey, it's 10. It's fine. Don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
She's going to find out you're going to lose half of everything. Anyways. but I mean, realistically, it's shit, because at the same token, you know, and I've had this conversation because I've been destroyed by relationships before. I'm one of those people that, like, when I'm in, I want to be like in. And then when it doesn't work, you're like, fuck, I did everything perfect. Damn, I actually didn't fuck up that. I mean, usually I absolutely, like, I fuck up right there and right there and right there. You have some little thing that back in the day, we should talk about this. And now it's like, I just like that dude's pictures 3 times. He knows.
Right. One of my favorite Seinfelds is the one where Jerry just is so picky about girls.
Yeah.
It's like the one girl eats her peas with a fork. He's like, I'm fucking done.
Which is understandable. That's weird.
You know what I mean? Just like, just the funny shit like that. Like, you know, there's those little things about a person where like, oh, that's that little ridiculous thing is a deal breaker. And now that's magnified.
Yeah.
Because there's so many more choices.
Yeah. Only thing I like to remind people of is the devil you know is better than the one you don't. So trust and believe. If you've got a good thing, trust from a guy who's blown it many, many times. Hold on tight, because trust, you're going to get to the next one and be like, oh God, do I miss her eating those fucking peas with the fork?
I tell Emily all the time that I'm sure I'll want to throw the next girl off the balcony just as much as I want to throw her off the balcony. So let's just
keep it alive. Because the problem is you only have half of the balcony if it's her. Just take it with her.
So it's you gotta laugh about that stuff. And you know, I'm sure I'm no picnic to live with on certain days. I'm sure I make that noise that I make that when I eat or something, that just, I'm sure Emily's
her head behind goes.
Me. She's probably stood behind me with a steak knife many times as I just sat there with headphones on in front of the YouTube, just eating my fucking oatmeal.
I assume that's why you invite me by sometimes. It's so she can remember it could be worse.
Right. Like, and bring a Dusty over.
I could be with Dusty.
It's always a great week after you're here.
Yeah, she's like,
she's always like, wow, I could have wound up with that. Like, he could still be that. You know?
I'm telling you, life all of a sudden looks good after I leave your house for a couple of days.
I know.
And motherfucker life is organizing our forks again. What is he doing? Yes.
Well, Dusty, as much as life is about choices, we have to make sure everyone knows to subscribe to the show, make the choice to make this a regular occurrence. It's just bodybuilding is just going to keep rolling. We did a good hour and a half today, bud.
And we've got, and we have an awesome guest that everyone's been waiting for next week.
Next week's guest is, every time I talk to this guy, we laugh a lot. So I think it's probably going to be pretty funny, but we'll have to get him. We'll have to make sure we have some like real serious questions so we can, you know, hear his point of view. And we have to try to poke him a little bit too, because I like him when he's angry a little.
And then I have some easy ways to get that done. So we're
going to. And then we'll have to get him like shaking his head going, you guys are fucking disgusting or something like that on this side.
Also, won't be hard to do.
Won't be hard to do. So I'm looking forward to it. So you're going to hear about who's on later in the week. Like we say, we don't like to say way too ahead of time. We like to kind of keep it under wraps, but you're going to love it. And so make sure you hit the little subscribe button. I'm supposed to say that at the beginning of the show, but I always fail.
Dusty. We edit it. They can move it forward if they need to. Yeah, Scott's fucking genius.
He can take that. He'll make that just the little clip that plays before anything.
Exactly.
Subscribe. Okay, Dusty, thanks for your time, buddy.
No doubt. Till next time.
It's just bodybuilding.